out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 17th of July, 2019. You're listening to me, Sir Longshanks, broadcasting on the radioarian.com stream. As it's Wednesday today, that means we must have with us revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager from carolynyeager.net. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Sven.
Lovely to hear that. Lovely to hear that. And it's a bit of a sad anniversary, I believe, you've got the sad anniversary coming up. Is that right? On the 20th or something, the anniversary of the assassination attempt of Adolf Hitler. And I believe Merkel's been talking about that and likening the populace of today to Adolf Hitler and all this sort of stuff that we've come to expect from her. And I believe you wanted to get into some of that. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I would, because I think it's a subject that I'm always very interested in. And I actually have quite a bit. It's not me that put it in there, but Hermann Giesler, whose memoir, my book with Wilhelm Kreisman, is taken from, called, which titled The Artist Within the Warlord, we've got four chapters. That's what he wrote about it on this July 20th assassination attempt, because he was very, as soon as it happened, shortly after, he was called to come and spend time at the headquarters with Hitler by O'Gorman and others there, who wanted to give Hitler some distraction and some enjoyment to get his mind off the horrors of this whole assassination attempt and all the things that they discovered from it. And so it's a lot in there about it. And so I'm very interested in talking about it. Now I want to mention that today I just found out is Angela Merkel's birthday. I think that's so funny. July 17th, that's her birthday, and it's today. So she is 65. You know, she's only 65, but she's falling apart physically. And that's that she's too overweight, and maybe she just doesn't take good enough care of herself or something, or she never did have that good of genes or something. Anyway, what they do in Germany now, in this article at Deutsche Welle and others, that of course they always remember this anniversary date, and they lay flowers at the place outside of the Bendler Block, big defense army building in Berlin, where Klaus Stauffenberg was executed the night of July 20th, back then, 44, a few others there. But this year is the 75th anniversary. So, you know, they will probably do a little bit more, something a little more elaborate. But I don't know. She's already talked about it in her radio announcement. But, you know, the truth about how this all occurred and who was involved and why and so on is not the way that they try to portray it now. I don't mean that, you know, everything is different, but it's just, they just put a different emphasis on it. And and lead you to think that, of course, their whole country was against Hitler, and luckily these brave men gave up their lives in order to stop what he was doing and so on, even though they failed and blah, blah. But one thing I want to point out, you know, Wikipedia has a long article on it, naturally, and they're wrong in so many things. And there was a sentence I saw up toward the beginning that says little could be done against Hitler, as he was heavily guarded and none of the plotters could get near enough to him. This is like they do at Wikipedia, you know, it's one sentence from some book, not even a big well-known writer, that whoever, you know, contributed this sentence to Wikipedia, and it's still there, just, you know, finds this sentence and puts it in there like it's some big fact. There's, you know, thousands of books out there about this, and they use them, and so they say what they want to say. But the fact is, that's just not true. You know, Hitler was not heavily guarded, and it was not hard for any of these, not any of them, but the major ones, certainly the ones in the military, to get near him. That was the problem. They were all able to get near him, and he wasn't that. He didn't want to be heavily guarded. He, you know, was available. He was accessible.
Well, why would you need to why would he need to be guarded? You know, this is the thing. He was well loved. And if you look at even today, I mean, you look at someone like Muammar Gaddafi, and he's driving all the way through Libya in an open top car with Libyans running along behind him. You know, anybody could have shot at him or anything, but he's loved by his people.
Well,
that's
exactly what Hitler was saying afterward. That Giesler writes in his memoir and mentions it a number of times, because it was something that Hitler said a number of times, that, you know, these men were cowards, because any one of them, most of them, a lot of them could have shot him anytime they wanted, because they all carried pistols at that time, before this particular assassination attempt, the biggest one that had ever been planned. Nobody was disarmed when they came to see Hitler, or when they came around Hitler. They had pistols on their belts, you know, they could have pulled out their pistol and shot him before he could have been, of course, they would have been captured. They wouldn't get away with it, but they could have done it. And none of them did ever. And he said, you know, they all could have, and they didn't do it. So, you know, the what you take from that is that they were not the brave men that they're portrayed as, because they thought they could get away with it. They didn't want to sacrifice themselves for this, because they had all kinds of plans that failed before this one, before they carried out this one. They had a few previous ones that didn't work out, because they were always trying to do it in a way that they wouldn't get caught. I just wanted to bring that up. But the thing that the main point I want to make today is that these men were in mostly functioning, the most serious ones, from religious motives. They are Christian religious and moral motives. And then second to that was their reputation of Germany in the rest of the world. You know, they wanted to get along with the Allies. They always had, and they wanted to be a part of the whole European thing. Even then, you know, they didn't want to be seen as the bad guys, and they thought this is what was happening by Hitler standing up to them, to the rest of Europe and practically the rest of the world, because the rest of, they turned on his government and Germany under him, and Germany period, as we know, through Churchill and others that they were from before World War One. They wanted to make Germany weak, and it wasn't Hitler. It was just Hitler came along the second time around, and so you know they kind of made it about Hitler, but it was really Germany they wanted to destroy. So their attitude was anti National Socialist, you could say, because. But it wasn't National Socialism they were against, but they were against the direction that Hitler was taking Germany. They didn't like that. As long as he was doing well in the first years, and even in the first years of the war, they weren't going against him. There were a few, the more religious ones, who didn't like it. And they were also very sensitive about the Jews. So we'll get into that. But there were some who didn't like it. But they said, well, we can't do anything about it because he's so popular and he's doing well. And they were not against the gains that Germany was making as far as getting territory back that had been taken away after the first war and in the Versailles Treaty. And they weren't against any of that at all. Even Stauffenberg was supportive of that. But at a certain point, when Germany started to have reverses, and then they decided that they wanted to get rid of Hitler and take over themselves. And this was the military people. But the military was the number one, the largest group amongst these assassination plotters, but that also included a level of the former aristocracy, the people whose names had von in them, you know, and who used to being considered, you know, they considered themselves the real Germany and the spokespeople, you know, the ones who were there to represent and defend Germany and with, you know, the rest of the world and so on. They looked down on Hitler and his National Socialist philosophy. And then there was also, and some politicians, of course, social Democrat politicians, who were against him. So there was this mix, but the ones who really carried it out and the ones only ones who could actually do anything were the military. And they, you know, the main actors in the military, though you hear a lot of names, were this von Stauffenberg, who was also an aristocrat, a count. You know, he's from he still had his titles. Now, that's another thing. Hitler never took anything away from any Germans, from the industrial class or from the aristocratic class, the big landholders, you know, whose family names go way back. He never took anything away from any of these groups. They kept everything they had, and he wanted them to work with in a unified way, in a pro-German way, with all of Germans, with the working class, and so on. We know that. So, you know, this was something that he never hurt these people. He wasn't a communist. He was anti-communist, so he didn't. And actually, that type of socialism. When people call Hitler a socialist based on that they don't like socialism, they don't understand what National Socialism was. And when I've tried to explain it to some people who are very conservative and anti-socialist, they just don't want to hear it. You know, they don't want to hear, well, it's still socialism. They're so against that. But he didn't behave that way except to make, you know, 5-year plans and things like that, and had a planned economic program to help bring Germany back. And it was successful. You know, he was successful with that. So they didn't have much to argue about, to argue with him about. But when, like I say, when the war effort started going bad, and of course, everybody was against Germany by then, you know, and then the United States came into it. That was probably the whole thing. And they then say, we're against this Jewish policy. You know, so it was both the Christian moral standard and the persecution of the Jews, or the, you know, saying we don't want any Jews. They couldn't tolerate that. For some of them, the Jewish issue was the main issue. So we've got von Stauffenberg and this Helmut Stief, who was brought up in West Prussia. And he's a kind of a strange one because he's a real short guy, but supposedly was like an organizational genius. And he became the head of organization in the Wehrmacht or the army. And he organized all kinds of events and things. And I guess he did such a good job. But it's funny when you see a picture of him because he's very small. And yet he for some reason, a lot of these army people were from the former Prussia, because that's where the strongest army formations were, you know, for so long. And another one was Hans von Oster, who was called a dreamy humanitarian, and he was there from the very beginning, and he even admitted he wanted to kill Germans. Now, he didn't mind sacrificing 100,000 Germans on the field to save future Germans that he thought were going to be slaughtered and destroyed. But a lot of it was even there. Another serious Christian who thought that the reputation of Germany would be damaged forever, which they're right. But then there was Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was not so active in the actual assassination attempt. He was a Lutheran pastor, wasn't in the military, but he was highly connected, and he and his friend Hans von Donjanyi, who was a half Hungarian German, half Jewish too, and Bonhoeffer's brother-in-law, they're both in the Abwehr under Canaris, and they functioned there. Their concern was very much the Jews, very much. And based on their Christian principles and beliefs, so they were pretty harmful. And of course, I have to mention the White Rose Group, which was not directly connected with this at all, but they also, their objection to the war and to Hitler was based on, absolutely, on their religious precepts. They were, you know, strongly Christian, and they followed certain Christian teachings very, very strictly, you know, and so they thought that Hitler was terrible, and they also didn't like what was the Jewish policy, very much so. And then the last one I'll mention by name is Henning von Treschko, who was another Prussian from one of these former big, important families. When they all go into the military, you know, because that's like what a gentleman can do. You know, they can make a career and a name for themselves in the military. A sentence by Treschko that what he said is very revealing, because this is kind of sums up what I've been saying. He said, the assassination must be attempted, whatever the cost. Then, even if it fails, we must take action in Berlin. What matters now is that the German resistance movement must take the plunge before the eyes of the world and of history. Compared to that, nothing else matters. Now, this was in a Joachim Fest book, who's considered one of the very good historians of the establishment of covering the National Socialist period. But this is revealing of how they thought, you know. They had to do it because before the eyes of the world, because Hitler was bringing Germany down in the eyes of the world. And they were, you know, they were loyal Germans. They really, you know, felt that they were Germany. This is where it came from. And, they always wanted to, the mentality here was to fit in and be respectable. And Giesler points out in his book, and he and Hitler discussed this, they didn't realize that the world had changed, particularly these military people. They thought people were still gentlemen. They thought that they could get along with Stalin in Russia and the army people there, and they thought they could get along with Churchill and Roosevelt. They didn't seem to realize what was truly going on. And then Hitler made the mistake of sticking with these people because they were good military leaders. You know, they were, they turned out to be traitors, but they knew their business militarily. And he didn't feel in the beginning that he could change all the military, you know, like put the SA troops, like that some people wanted, and make them Germany's military. He didn't think they were good enough, that they were, experienced enough at all. And he went with the traditional military, the Reichswehr, which became the Wehrmacht. And they all worked with him well, too. And a lot of them were very sincere, and they weren't traitors. But another thing is that these traitors talked to all the other military leaders, trying to get them to join their group. You know, this went on for a few years. And some of these others said, basically no thank you, but they didn't turn them in. And this is very demoralizing to Adolf Hitler when he realized from all the that came out, because the Gestapo did a very good job of unraveling all of it eventually. And I don't mean like, you know, within a few months. It was demoralizing because he didn't realize that this kind of thing was going on. He had a lot of suspicion. And he knew, and then he kind of was like, I think I put it this way, kind of like kicking himself that he recognized it, he didn't want to do anything about it because he didn't want to believe it, but also he didn't know for sure. He didn't have clear evidence. And he was in the middle of a total war. He was in the middle of, you know, by then, absolute desperation in the war. And there was no time to suddenly make a big change and throw up, you know, a big scandal. In the military, he said it would be demoralizing to the soldiers. He was always, number one in his mind, always was the fighting soldier on the fronts. And he cared most about them and thought that would be very damaging to them. And he then foresaw a repeat of World War I, where this treason took over, and when people became aware of it, they lost heart, and the soldiers, you know, felt all demoralized and couldn't fight and didn't. That's what took place in World War I, and he didn't. That was what he built his whole position on, to lead Germany, was what he experienced, what they experienced in World War I. So this he was in. You know, it was I call it tragic. It was a true tragedy, like a Greek tragedy. It was just a true tragic situation.
Well, I'll just say
but you know, he dealt with it and did the best he could. But you know, Germany was not able. It wasn't this that brought Germany down, but they were already so far gone, you know, and I mean, the war was already so far gone. So what?
Well, I think, you know, you were saying that there's that church faction there. I'd say that's probably the progressive faction in the church, because he was purging the progressive faction and leaving the traditional faction alone. So I wouldn't say that it was you know,
you're
the Christians
up to
doing
me now.
That. I would say that it was the progressive faction in the church, because all of his policies were the same policies as the Catholic Church had originally, putting stars on the Jews, kicking them out, and all the rest of it. It was only modern progressives that suddenly had this Philo-Semitic "we love the Jews" idea, and they've taken over the church now. So I, you know, that's the only sort of thing that I would question there.
Well, that was the church. You know, it's not the church that you follow, of course. I'm not trying to attack Christianity. I'm saying these particular Christians were more extreme. But all I'm saying is that this was how they believed, and this was played a big role in their belief. In their motivations and in their opposition, this was based on this in large part. So this is these Germans, and this is still this type of German is so common. Of course, even more common today. They want to fit in. You know, I have this theory that. Germany is, it's not a theory. I just kind of came up with this thinking about it. So it's kind of a theory, but Germany is geographically conditioned to think in terms of getting along with others, because they've always, you know, geographically surrounded by other countries. They're in the middle of Europe. So when Germany asserts itself as it did after Bismarck, let's say, and, you know, the new unified Germany, unifying it with Prussia and making the new German Empire, when it began to assert itself as its own personality and, you know, its own nation, so on, it got in trouble with the other nations, but mostly with Britain. That was that's who didn't like it the most. But then the French didn't like it either, and so they got together with Russia on the other side and said, "Well, you know." But Germany has always been aware, I guess, you know, always that they want to get along, but not like say the British Isles, which is over there on the edge, on the end, their own island, and they can see themselves more independently. But I think that's been a factor. And then Germany was so long the leader, the head of the Holy Roman German Empire for hundreds of years. And they had the leader of the Christian world come as a German. And I had a good friend. I hope he's still alive. Can't think of his name right offhand, but a very knowledgeable professor. Who was the first to suggest to me that this had an influence, this whole being head of the Holy Roman German Empire had an influence on Germany being very spiritual, very spiritually attuned or turned for so many years the people were not as the Germans were not as worldly enough to deal with people like the British, who were very worldly and had been figuring out how to stay top for all those years instead of being a part of the church, you know, in the same sense. So this is, I think there's something to that. So Germans struggle with this getting along with others and fitting in and not rocking the boat and so on. And Hitler was working, he's had to work against it, like going against the tide, you know, or going against the current, trying to bring Germans, because he saw it in World War I, he saw the spirit that Germany had, to to care about themselves and to stand up and be a united nation and all of this. So I think that, this assassination attempt could be seen or should be seen with that background. And when you say, you know, why Germany, is in the state it's in today, it's that explains a lot, I think.
Yeah, you can see the same attitude back then in the people who tried to assassinate him that are running Germany now, that are running the church now, that are running everything now. Thankfully, back
yeah,
then,
they're the same people. They're a minority. That's the German people who are in charge now. Right.
They're the majority now. Well, thank you for coming on today, Carolyn. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in.